This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.
There has been an initial compromise in the state of consciousness, but we cannot speak of a coma. His eyes are open. Sometimes he looks like he's resting with his eyes closed. He opens his eyes when he's spoken to, and there is no talk of coma.
The interpreted comments of Vatican spokesman Joaquin Navarro Valls, speaking this morning from Rome. At this hour, Pope John Paul II, so far as we know, certainly remains in grave condition. We will update you on his condition as we learn more. Our latest word is that another announcement is expected from the Vatican at about 10:30 a.m. Eastern Time. And we will certainly give you the substance of that announcement as soon as it's made. Dan Shore joins us. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Scott.
And of course, the eyes of many people around the world are drawn to the papal apartment overlooking St. Peter's Square in Rome. The Pope has received the anointing of the sixth sacrament, also known as the last rites.
Mm-hmm.
His papacy, I think we can say, is coming to an end. It has been the third longest, one of the most momentous in history. It's probably not too early to begin to turn to you and ask how do we measure what happened during those years, and how this very vivid figure on the world stage has changed history.
Well, first Polish Pope, his papacy the longest, as you suggest, in this century. Among the things he'll be remembered for is that he was the first Pope to attend services in a synagogue, the first Pope to attend services in a mosque, the first Pope to visit Cuba, one of the most traveled popes in history. With all of his reaching out and traveling the world, there was also a very traditional side, a very hard line on matters of sex or gender. But he did want very much to try to bring people to understand the excesses of capitalism, and so that while he was traditionalist and right-wing on matters of church doctrine, he really was one who wanted to remake the world.
Mm. Lech Wałęsa, over the past couple of days, said that 50% of the change in Eastern Europe that resulted in the overturning of communism there, he fixed to Pope John Paul. He said, yes, eventually it would have happened, but it would have taken many years more and cost many more lives.
Well, there's no question about that. I was in Poland during part of that time, and in Krakow, too, where the Pope then was the cardinal. And there was this devotion to him that people used to say that Poland was the most Catholic of communist countries and the most communist of Catholic countries, is what they used to say. And that was largely due to him, and Lech Wałęsa has good reason to remember him fondly.
And the growth of the Church in Africa, in Latin America, in Asia, other places around the world, has probably permanently changed the nature of the Catholic Church and certainly the nature of the people who will determine the next Pope.
Well, he created 75 cardinals, 14 of them in Latin America, 5 in Africa, 5 in Asia. Perhaps the Italian grip and the European grip on the papacy may change. We wait to see.
The Vatican took a number of steps to sustain the Pope in his final weeks. He was hospitalized a couple of times, fitted with a breathing tube and a feeding tube. Do these actions afford us a greater insight into how the Vatican now views end-of-life issues?
Well, there have been some statements, among them by the Pope himself back in 1998 in Vienna, on the subject of the end of life. And apparently it's a very difficult subject to deal with. They try to suggest that in general, all normal methods to be used to sustain life, that nothing should be done to induce death. For example, the Terry Schiavo case comes mm-hmm. into recognition here. This is a very tricky area. And as to the Pope himself, there is no question of his being in any vegetative state. He's said to be lucid at least part of the time. And so he doesn't have to, at this point, make decisions of life or death.
And as you noted, Terry Schiavo died this week. She was 41. Reportedly, there'll be two memorial services, a private mm-hmm. one in Pennsylvania, public ceremony in Florida. There will also be an autopsy. The Schiavo story
has been an autopsy. The autopsy has been done, and we now have to know the results of it, which have not been released.
Okay. Thank you. I stand corrected. The story does not appear to have ended, does it?
The
Schiavo story.
Well, no, I don't think so. I think it'll have its political impact for a long time to come. There was a thing which I think everybody now believes to have been a stupid thing to do, for the president and Congress to try to get involved and get the courts to start all over again. And I think that, for example, when you take people like Tom DeLay, the mm-hmm. House Majority Leader, they used to think of him as being very tough and very helpful to others in the House. I think now they have to consider whether he is becoming a net minus.
Mm-hmm. There are, to be sure, some people who certainly thought that the president and Tom DeLay did the right thing in intervening in Terry Schiavo's
case. Not many. The polls indicate that a large majority of Americans thought it was the wrong thing to do. No, it was one of the strange things is that usually the Republicans in the House were pretty well versed on what the public wants. In this case, they really missed the boat.
This week, Presidential Commission blamed the U.S. intelligence community for failing to provide the administration with an accurate assessment of Iraq's weapons programs in the lead-up to the war. That commission was headed by George Lawrence Silberman and former Democratic Senator from Virginia, Charles Robb, and called the agency's, quote, that certainly made it into every story, dead wrong.
Yes, dead wrong was the phrase that came out of this. It was not only a matter that they thought they were really terrible on totally overestimating what Iraq had, which was basically nothing, apparently. It wasn't only that, but even when we're talking about the current situation, the current threats like Iran and North Korea, mm-hmm. and this report says the United States knows disturbingly little about what is going on there.
Is John Negroponte, of course, has been nominated to be the nation's first intelligence director. He's expected to be confirmed by the Senate. What are the recommendations he's going to have to act on immediately?
Well, what he's supposed to do is to ride herd over the 15 intelligence agencies and get them to work together. But in a sense, his report suggests going the other way. They want these agencies to be able to act in their own way, to exchange information, and to be given a certain kind of independence. So I think the question of what happens in our intelligence community, even though there have been now three reports, I think that remains open.
Mm-hmm. And is Mr. Negroponte going to have a base of support to effect some of these reforms or within the administration?
He has one very important base of support. The name is George W. Bush. And with that support, he can go very far.
That's the President of the United States. Dan Shore, thanks very much.
Yeah.